Drew McIntyre here from WWE. Wielding the Claymore can be a life of chaos. When I'm not dominating in the ring, Chumba Casino is how this warrior takes a wee break. With hundreds of online social games and new weekly releases, there's always something fresh to try. And those daily boosts, next level. Even my free time feels like Valhalla. So when life feels like a battle, kick up your feet, have some fun, and let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See T's and C's. 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor. I welcome Professor Richard Epstein, Senior Fellow of the Hoover Institution, writing at Defining Ideas about the Biden administration's antitrust concerns. I go immediately to a news item at the beginning of the month. The U.S. Justice Department's acting head of its antitrust division, Mr. Richard Powell, said that labor markets were a top priority for enforcement efforts, indicating a shift toward issues set by the White House's executive orders on competition. Richard, a very good evening to you. That dry language points to a presentation that I learned from you in Defining Ideas. It's about the concerns that the Biden administration has that excessive concentration of labor of businesses leads to wage reduction, if I have read you correctly. How so? What does that mean, wage reduction? Because there are too many workers who are good masons, so therefore we can cut the payment per hour we pay in this region? Well, is that what they're talking about?
Well, they're talking about it in a somewhat more technical term. The way in which they describe this is monopsony. And a monopoly is where a seller has exclusive control over a market. And a monopsony is where you flip it around and it's the buyer that has the control. And these are people who buy labor. And so therefore, acting as monopolists, what they say is they will essentially lower the wages that they're prepared to pay, just the way a seller will raise his price. When they lower the wages, it means that there'll be fewer people who will be taking these jobs. And then they will be able to essentially make more money by selling fewer goods at higher prices. At better prices and better profits because they're paying so little in the wages. And that's the basic claim. The issue then is, what do we do to enforce this particular vision? And the insight that is being put forward is that when you do a merger review between two major companies, you not only look at their product market, but you look at all their labor markets. And to give you an idea of how dramatic a shift this is, suppose you were talking about a merger between two major oil companies. And the commodity is obviously going to be oil. And you could look at the concentration at gas stations of the two companies in various markets and see whether they have to divest some or not. If you do this on the labor side, a company like ExxonMobil will have thousands of different job classifications in hundreds of different locations. And the issue is, do you want to hold this merger back because you think in some particular cases the two companies get together, the wages will go down an undue amount? I regard this as an empirical impossibility to do. There have been some studies which have said that, in fact, this can be done. The only cases where there's any convincing evidence of this are cases where there's restriction in market entry, most notably concentrated hospital markets, where the industry is organized around the principle that you need to have a certificate of need before you could open up a new hospital. So if it turns out that there's a real market power that hospitals have, it's going to allow them to raise prices to consumers and also to lower wages to their workers. So that's the concern. But what you need to do is to get rid of the certificates of operation, certificates of necessity, and at that particular point, competitive forces ought to take it over. Otherwise, I regard this as a fool's errand. There are too many markets. They're too small. They're structured in so many different and complicated ways. The last thing you want to do in a merger review is to spend several years looking at data that doesn't matter. It may well kill off a deal which otherwise would be beneficial. If you stick to the traditional view and concentrate on projects, you could do a better or worse job. I'm confident that the Biden administration will do a worse job, but that's at least within traditional areas, and I don't think we need to go here.
I want to look at the tech industry. You mentioned that in particular because it's a major item on Capitol Hill right now, Silicon Valley and the great wealth that it has attended the genius. And the concern here is you write about a no-poach agreement being one way to avoid the excessive concentration, but at the same time, doesn't that keep firms from being competitive, a no-poach agreement? Isn't that a good thing to poach from others?
Well, that's exactly why it is that these things run into serious antitrust difficulties. Let me just give you the simple version of this. Antitrust is two kinds of arrangements. There's some things which are absolutely done in formal conduct. You see the agreements, you understand what they're about. And there are other things that are done in secret. What happens is you have to be able to take the things up when they're done in secret so that what you can do is examine them. The no poach agreements were probably done in secret. But what they are, they're saying, I won't hire your workers if you don't hire my workers. And if you just look at it in that term, that's a classic effort to try to create a cartel. And so you don't need to have modern antitrust laws to deal with this, which is the thing that's at issue in the merger reviews. You just apply standard rules. And generally, when you have no poach agreements, the presumption is that they're illegal unless the companies can start to give you reasons why they ought to be done. And labor is a very complicated commodity because some workers essentially are just workers, and other workers turn out to have trade secrets of one kind or another, which if given to another company would give them an unfair advantage. So a lot of times these no poach agreements are designed to protect these trade secrets, which can be worth hundreds of millions of dollars. So you can't give a per se condemnation against them, but in the case that we're talking about, it was actually settled in 2015. For $415 million. So that was done long before the new stuff was going on. So the question is not whether or not there's going to be any enforcement of the antitrust law in labor markets. There always has been. The question is rather, can you go beyond what has already been done and have it make sense? And my view about it is we're about in the right place. We don't have to move any further on this particular situation. And that the effort to extend this to merges on the theory that somehow or other, even without these no poach agreements of it, that these companies, all of them know how to charge exactly the right, not charge the right prices, but to pay exactly the right wages so they could get that. Most industries, I think that this is by and large a mistake. And there was a recent paper in the AER by a couple of authors. And what they said essentially is that you could see it in high paid positions in the hospital industry. You can't find this effect anywhere else if you look at aggregate data. And that sort of confirms with what the basic theory says. There's too much movement within a given industry and across different industries. So if you happen to be a janitor, you were working in a hospital, you don't like the hospital, you could work for a construction company. And if you're a mid-level account executive, it may take a little bit of retraining, but you could leave the hospital injury and go into the insurance or into the banking industry. So the labor flexibility is greater than the product flexibility, and it's only with very high-priced talent that you get this possibility of them being squeezed. But on the other hand, it's a two-way game. The most powerful union in the United States is probably the pilot union. Why is that? Because they're heavily licensed. And if you want to fire these guys, you can't run an airline because you can't just simply go to the street and get yourself some new pilots to take the place of the ones who are already there. So in these high concentrated licensed professions, it's a bilateral monopoly. You've got real problems. Sometimes the hospitals are going to be stronger. Sometimes the airlines are going to be weaker. Very difficult to predict these things. Where we are is about right. I don't think we need new initiatives.
All right. Then I have a concern here that the Biden administration are excessively concerned. I understand hospitals and tech industry. But when it comes to unions, and the president has indicated from the beginning of his campaigns many years ago that he's a strong union supporter. It is not for nothing that the AFL-CIO building is right near the White House, very close to the White House. Now, unions are a way of dealing with monopoly, correct? And they need protection, correct? And the Biden
administration... Well, they're not only a way... They're not a way of dealing with monopolies. They're a way of creating monopolies. And so that what happens is if you deal with a particular union, there used to be a competitive market in which you could bid one worker against the other. But what the National Labor Relations Act does very explicitly is it says, here's a bargaining unit. We will hold an election. And if the union wins, it becomes the exclusive representative of all the workers in that union, including those that voted against it. The firm is not allowed to contact directly with the workers in that particular union, and it can't sort of go out and hire scabs or other people unless there's been an unfair labor practice committed by the union. So this is a straight device to create unions, and this is one of the things that you're never quite sure. all of the people who point out that monopolies by employers, monopsonies may exist, seem to be amazingly agnostic about the power of unions. In some industries, they're not very powerful, but in public employment, where there aren't closed substitutes, teachers' unions, guard unions, prison guard unions, and so forth, firefighters and police officers, they're very powerful unions because essentially there's no closed substitute for them. But there is in the Biden administration and all of these proposals, not a single word said, maybe what we ought to do is to figure out how we control the monopoly power of unions that are created by statutes instead of chasing after employers when there's no statute and no agreement, no statutory violation, no contract amongst them, on the theory that we can figure out that there's some concentration ratio which is high enough that we might want to block the merger or otherwise change it. All the general studies are about the fact that such power is said to exist. None of them about what it is you're supposed to do when you look at a given case and try to figure out how it is you analyze simultaneously 30 different labor markets in 50 different locations.
You report that the progressive economists who are informed of the Biden administration's ambitions have a number in their heads about what monopsony power does to wages. And when we come back, what is to be done about this disagreement? Richard Epstein is a professor of law at the University of Chicago and NYU, also a senior fellow at the Hoover Institution, writing most recently for the Hoover Institution's Defining Ideas about labor markets and antitrust law now under the Biden administration. This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor.
Stay tuned for more of CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.
What if you could get more from what you already do? As a Shell Fuel Rewards member, that's just a regular weekday morning. You get more rewards, more savings, and more special offers. Earn rewards when shopping, dining out, and fueling up. And all of that becomes fuel savings when you're at the pump. Use the Shell app and enjoy life with more. Your nearest Shell station is less than 5 miles away.
Lots of places can expose you to identity theft. That's why LifeLock monitors hundreds of millions of data points a second for threats to your identity, which is way more than anyone can do on their own. If we find anything suspicious, like new loans or changes to your financial accounts, we alert you right away, all through text, phone, email, or the LifeLock app. Save up to 30% your first year. Visit LifeLock.com/iHeart. Terms apply.